Paul Grafton is up. He is originally from Santa Monica. He lives in Morro Bay. He is a naturalist, and we love hearing his stories. So please welcome Paul Grafton. Bury the Hatchet is our theme tonight.
Thank you. A little shout out to my wife for coming and some Rancho El Choro members, so that's pretty cool. So thanks for the support. Okay, bury the hatchet. Where do I start? High school. Not a great student, didn't study hard, but through no effort of my own, I'm very good at math. So I graduate, and then it's what am I going to do with my life? And have no idea. So I decide to follow the path of my brother and my dad and go into engineering, and I went up here to Cuesta College and took a bunch of engineering courses, physics, calculus. And my goal was to get into Cal Poly, but at the time when this was all happening, it seemed like it was impossible. There was one person was allowed in, and they had military experience, so they shoveled me off to Humboldt. It's kind of a place that... And that was a good experience, and when I got up there, I took my first semester there, and we're taking dynamics, which is a lot of physics and math. And I remember I was in my study group with my friends that we were studying with, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to be done with this crap. I hate doing math all the time. And then the room went silent. And people looked up from their calculators, and there were some furrowed eyebrows. And they're like, we love this stuff. And I was like, what? They're like, what do you think you're going to do when you graduate? And my body just sort of shuddered at the thought of doing math the rest of my life. And it was one of those moments where like the truth is being spoken here. And so from that moment, it was literally just a few weeks before I realized I got to drop out of this major. It was kind of a crisis time for me. And when you drop out of college, one of the side effects, if your parents are supporting you, is that they stopped doing that. And so my mom was like, you know, that's great, get a job. So I ended up getting 3 jobs. First one was janitor. And I was scrubbing toilets and mopping floors at a local printing press. And then the second job, dishwasher. And that was at the dining hall at Humboldt State University. And they gave me the job that nobody wanted, which was to scrub the big cauldrons of soup that the chef always managed to burn pretty heartily the bottom of. And so it was a lot of scrubbing and no praise in any way. Both these jobs were minimum wage, I want to add. And then the third job was working on a farm. And this job I actually really loved because I was outside and I was working with people, and it was an organic potato farm. And the two things I really loved, it was going into the market and sneaking, kind of watching people grab the potatoes that we had harvested earlier in the day and going like, wow, you know, like this is real work. Like this feels good. And the second thing I really loved was just the soil. I loved the look, the color of the soil. I loved the feel of the soil. And the potatoes, you have to really dig, you have to like move soil around to like find the potatoes. And so there was a lot of, literally my hands were in the soil. And so I did 3 years of this until it finally dawned on me, like, I don't really want to be scrubbing cauldrons for the rest of my life. And so I decided to go back into college. And my parents were happy, but they're like, well, let's just see how it goes. Like, we're not paying for that until you can prove. So I had to get a grant. And at that time, they had Pell Grants. And you could get basically $4,000 for a year of college. And I'd kind of putzed around for enough time that I was 24, which is sort of like, you're an older person now, like, you get it. No, you can, you know, basically get it. And so I got $4,000, and I was able to not have to take a student loan, and I got another part-time job, and boom, I went back and I took a soils class. And the first teacher I had was this guy, and it was Dr. Green, his last year. And over the course of these 3 years that I was not in school, I became very idealistic. My hair grew long. I got a beard. You know, it was a complete Humboldt experience. And my preferred mode of transportation was skateboard. And my holes had a lot of, my clothes had holes and ripped jeans. And it was great. It was awesome. And so when I went into my soils class, I would skateboard in there. And I would, you know, if the teacher was lecturing here, I would sit right there. And you know, I'd worked on a farm for 3 years. I knew soil. I knew soil was a stupid old crotchety guy, Dr. Green. And he was retiring. And so every time he said something that sounded a little off, like clear cutting was good, my hand went up and I was like, let me tell you about clear cutting. And this was the time when there was a lot of protests with the Redwoods, and I had my guitar and was writing songs, and so I was just in people's face about this. And it's kind of interesting because that was the very class I met my wife in, and the story they say with her and her girlfriends, they sat in the back and they're like, what's up with that dude who's sitting in the front with the long hair and the skateboard and he's really aggro? Well, I did well in that class. And then came the next level, and that meant encountering Dr. Hoxwell. Now, Dr. Hoxwell was the head of the soils department. He'd been there at Humboldt State for 35 years, and he had a reputation for being very conservative, very Christian and religious, very pro-clear cutting, and he was just tough. He was a hard teacher. And so everyone's like, oh, you know, you're going to have Hoxwell. Gah. And I was like, screw it, man. I've been scrubbing toilets for 3 years. I can take it. I don't care who Dr. Hoxwell is, man. So I did my thing. I sat in the front row. And every time he said something I didn't agree with, you know, the hand went up like this, you know. And we had a little game going on where he, I think, took a little bit of delight. And like, oh, here's one of those hippie idealist guys, you know. And so sometimes I would ask, I would say, I don't agree with, and he would just look at me, and he had glasses, kind of a long nose, and his eyes would look over the glasses, and he'd just look at me for about 10 seconds silence. And then he would just motor on through with his lecture as if I wasn't, he's like, I see you, you're nothing, and I'm going to go on. Which I didn't really like, but my retaliation was that I figured him out, and that he had such a humongous ego that the textbooks meant nothing. Like, everyone was reading textbooks, and I realized, like, he doesn't test on the text. He only tests on what he says. So I recorded him, and I would put my tape recorder right in front of him, and I would go back and listen. I memorized every single thing he said in the class, and I aced every test he had. And I think that was a little frustrating for him. I remember him dropping my test and it would float to the ground, so I'd have to pick it up, and I'd look at it, and then I'd be like, oh, 98%. And, he gave us an assignment to write a report for the end of the year, and I knew what I was going to do. I was going to do the effects of clear cutting on soil biology. And of course, I found 30 articles saying it was basically the worst possible thing you could do. And I wrote this long paper and cited everything, and it was great. And then he read it, and he returned it to me, and he said, you know, great job. And then at the very back, it's big red, unbalanced, B. You know, and I was like, oh. And then on the flip side, he wrote about 30 articles handwritten out. I mean, this took him a lot of work. How great clear cutting is as a harvesting method for forests. You know, and how good it helps the soil and all this crap. And so we kind of had this debate and these different games that we played. And then I ended up getting an A in the class, and then it was the end of it. And the next semester, I took a one-unit, like, discussion group where we read scientific papers and talked about them, and we had to do a presentation. And I went... During this time, it was kind of a little bit of a transition for me. One of my best friends got married, and through heavy influence from my mother, I decided to cut all my hair off and shave my beard, and so I looked very different as the semester went on. And I did a present, and I remember Dr. Hoxwell saying, like, oh, there's some new research on mycorrhizal fungi, and so I was like, I'm doing my report on that. And I did my report on it. And he came up to me. He was like, hey, that was great. I learned a lot of stuff. Like, good job. I was like, wow, it's his first compliment. That's cool. But I still don't like you. Well, I was filling out the paperwork for the next semester, and I was looking at the Pell Grant, and I looked at the small print, thankfully, and it said, if you have 150 units, semester units, you are ineligible to receive any more Pell Grants. And I think the idea is, like, you can't stay in college forever. We're not going to fund you. You know, 150 units is a lot. And I had 150 units, and I was like, shit. And I was like, how can I get out of this? And so I realized my only option was if I could go to Dr. Hoxwell and say, give me a fail for this one unit discussion group. And so I kind of, with my tail between my legs, went into his office and look, you know, I've dressed up nice, like took a shower and shaved and I went in there and you know, he's like, and I told him the situation. I'm like, you know, if there's any way you could possibly fail me from, you know, this is at the end of the, you know, almost pretty much done. And he's like, well, I can't do that. You did a very nice presentation on mycorrhizal fungi. You've been to every group. You've been very active and passionate. And you could tell he's just like, I'm going to screw you. Yeah, all those times. And he's like, I'm just, you know, it's unethical. You've done all the work. You're going to, I'm going to give you a passing grade. And I just went, oh, man, you know, of course you would, you know. And so I just got up and I walked out of the room just going like, this is, I just lost 4,000 ducks. And then I hear as I'm walking out of the room, hey, Paul, come here for a sec. And I walk back in and he says, you know, he has these little notes out of the syllabus for this one unit class. He said, I'm looking at this right here and I noticed that it says, in order to get a passing grade for this one unit discussion group, you must attend every class that we offer. And I'm like, and the only thing left was basically like the last little meeting. It was like a potluck, you know? And so I was like, so what are you saying? Like, I shouldn't just miss this class? And he's like, I'm not saying anything. And so I walked out like kind of vague, like, so I ditched the potluck, didn't go, and I waited for my grades to come over Christmas break, and I came in the mail and I looked at this thing, fail. I was so happy. I was like, oh, you came through. And I was like, that was so awesome. And so that basically saved me $4,000. I could apply to the thing. Oh, yeah, I don't have 150 units. And so the next semester, I took a soil fertility class from him. And I kind of looked at him a different way after that. And I realized, like, he'd really helped me out. And so when we went on field trips, we did a lot of field trips. We'd take a bus. I would sit in the front. I would talk to him. And, you know, he'd tell me about his life, and I'd be like, you know, he'd be like, let me tell you about my personal relationship with Jesus, and, you know, I'd listen for a while, and then he's like, tell me about your girlfriend, or tell me, you know, and we had genuine conversations, and I did really well in the class, and, you know, he shook my hand as I graduated, and I was like, oh, this guy's a great guy. I went for a trip, and I was in New Zealand, and I wanted to get into this grad program there, and I needed some letters of recommendation, and so I shot him an email and said, can you write me a letter of recommendation? You know, no response. I was like, who knows with this guy? And then about a month later, my mom got something in the mail, and she mailed it over, and it was this letter from Dr. Hoxwell, and I sat, you know, it gets me kind of choked up thinking about it, because it was basically, this guy is great. He works really hard. He's really passionate about soil. And then this whole paragraph about, like, just like what a wonderful person I was. And I remember just like putting it down and just crying. You know, it was like all of the things you just crave and long to hear from like an older man who like knows. And what I took from that moment and what I take today still is, there's people that on the surface you look at and you just immediately disregard. You know, they say they're, you know, they might have a viewpoint that just is totally disagreeable, or their opinion about something I just can't tolerate. But I found that if you can kind of find where their passion is, or if you can kind of meet or just stick through it, then it's often those people that you don't really at first appreciate that sometimes give you that blessing that is as more meaningful than almost anything else. And so I don't carry such a big hatchet. I'm always looking like, oh yeah, what does this person have that that I'm not seeing yet? And I got that from Dr. Hoxwell, who's, you know, now one of my heroes. So thank you.
That was Paul Grafton. Our theme tonight is Bury the Hatchet. As I said before, next month we won't be, it won't be the third Wednesday. It'll be the fourth Wednesday next month because the third Wednesday is the day before Thanksgiving and something's happening. I'm not sure what. And the theme, and we'll be starting at 7 o'clock. So we're going to start a 7 o'clock start time starting then. Next month on the 28th, and the theme for next month is As Luck Would Have It. As Luck Would Have It. Humboldt State are the lumberjacks. And when you go to Humboldt, when you're in Humboldt County, you say lumberjack, and it's just lumberjack. I mean, the locals up there are like, no, it's loggers. But there hasn't been a group of loggers that have gone to the president of Humboldt State and demanded the name be changed to the Humboldt State Loggers. Anyway, okay. Dean Thompson, are you ready? Dean, there he is. Dean Thompson is originally from Inglewood. He's a Giants fan. He currently lives in Los Osos. He's a naturalist. Please welcome Dean Thompson.
All right, thank you. So originally I was talking to Paul the other night and I told him, I said, I don't really have any story for tonight. I don't know what to say about Bury the Hatchet. I mean, when I think of burying the hatchet, I think of like, forgiveness or something. And I've always gotten along with people all the time. And a lot of times when I have to bury the hatchet, I'm helping other people bury their hatchets. And then I think about a hatchet. A hatchet is such a wonderful tool. I like hatchets. I like burying them in wood is what I like to do. And using them for splitting. Now, an axe you can use to split big logs, but a hatchet is so useful for getting kindling and making nice, fine pieces of kindling for your fire. And it's just such, it's almost like a zen-like thing when I'm using the hatchet trying to get kindling, especially when you have that nice milled wood with straight grains, and you can just put it in there, and it's almost so fun just to see how long you can get that hatchet going down before, bling, it just springs right apart, and you try and get it smaller and smaller, and it's so satisfying just getting it in the fire and putting the match to it and just watching it go up. But that's not really what I wanted to talk about. What I wanted to talk about is a form of a hatchet called a tomahawk, and that's, I like throwing axes, okay, and throwing tomahawks, and it's just, it's a very satisfying thing, and throwing axes and tomahawks and hatchets are very similar. The hatchet is actually balanced different with the handle, and the throwing axe is just a little bit longer. And I do something every year that people look at me and think I'm a little bit kind of crazy that I do this, and that is that I am a volunteer at the middle school, okay? And that in itself is kind of weird, but they do this thing at the local middle school called Rendezvous Day, and it's the first Monday before Thanksgiving, and on that Thanksgiving week, and all the eighth graders have what they call a rendezvous, and they're studying Wild West, and they're studying the mountain men, and so they have a guy come out there that demonstrates black powder rifles and fur trapping, and they have a rope bridges that the kids practice crossing on rope bridges, and they make stew, and they do hand sewing, and they do archery, and they do storytelling, which is how I kind of got into it, and they also do tomahawk throwing. Okay, so I got in, they wanted me to tell stories, so I told stories in the morning, and then I saw where they had the archery range, and I said, can I help out with that? I want to, you know, play with projectile weapons. And so I went over there, and I had to, first of all, the first thing I did when I got there is the PE teacher had strung all the bows, and so I had to unstring all the bows and put them correctly because they strung them backwards, okay? They're recurve bows. And so they strung them. It was just so I made those good. And we did a little, you know, archery, and the kids would show up. And it was really fun doing that. And then I kind of looked off to the side where they had the tomahawk throwing. And I got really nervous because there was about 20 eighth graders with tomahawks about that long, metal tomahawks, and they had eucalyptus rounds about this big propped up, and each eucalyptus round was there, and then the next one was like a foot away from that one and a foot away from that one. So all the kids are, you know, about this close. So there'd be like three kids about right here, and they're about from me to that wall, actually farther than that, and they're just, and there's axes flying through the fling going, and it's just, and so I went over there. I said, I think the archery thing's under control. So I went over there and started talking with them, and we started talking about tomahawks, and the PE teacher had just been thrown into this, had no idea, you know, what to do. And so I kind of helped them out. And first thing I did is I stopped everything. We spread the targets out a little bit more. And then I had everybody get really close to the target. And all we did is we had them just take the tomahawk and just do one throw with one rotation. Is all it was, just one rotation to get it stuck. Because the kids were throwing these, so they weren't sticking anything. And it's really interesting watching these kids take this axe, this hatchet, and throw it. And some of the boys are like, ah, I got this, and they just wail at them. And then there were these, you know, some girls would get them and be like, go away. Go away, hatchet. You know, go away, axe. But in working with them and having the look on their face as when they would throw it and the one rotation and it would stick, and right when that thing stuck in that wood, the look on their faces, you could just tell, I want to do it again. And it sticks. And so that's what kind of keeps me going back. And once they can get one rotation, then we back up so they can do two rotations. And it's evolved now. I've done this now for a number of years, and now we get them. We talk about the role of axes and hatchets and what they were useful, how they were useful for mountain men to use for all sorts of tools. And it was a last resort tool to throw, and you better be good at it. Because if you threw your axe and you missed the person, then they had your weapon. And so you better be good at it. And it was kind of a last resort, and I'm looking forward to November when I get to go back and bury that hatchet in those eucalyptus rounds with those eighth graders. Thanks.